Hi there, it's Matt here and welcome back to the podcast. Today is an episode that's going to focus on perhaps the best principles and practices for optimizing your sleep, which is why it's important for me to state very clearly who this episode is going to be most effective for and who it is not going to be very effective for. This episode is not designed for people suffering from insomnia. It is not about recommendations that will treat or cure insomnia. Now, don't worry. After this episode, I'm going to do a very deep dive. In fact, I'm going to do an entire mini-series all about insomnia. And that will include how clinical practice thinks about the treatment of insomnia. Instead, this episode is for people who don't have clinical insomnia, but would still like to try and do all they can to fine-tune and optimize their sleep. Now, that's not to say, by the way, that many of the things I will describe here are often used as part of the treatment plan for insomnia, but they are only a very, very small part of that plan. And they are by no means sufficient for treating insomnia, not even close. So today, I'm going to go over five, let's say, conventional tips for optimizing your sleep that I suspect some of you may have already heard about before. And then I'm going to add five bonus unconventional tips for optimizing your sleep that you may not have heard about before. Now, I'm not going to simply bark a set of rules at you down this microphone. That's not helpful. I'm going to explain them because I firmly believe that people respond to reasons and not rules. So I'm going to take time to try to unpack the reasons behind each one of these quote-unquote rules, as it were. So let's start with the five conventional tips for optimizing sleep, many of which are part of what we call good sleep hygiene. So I'm sure you've heard of dental hygiene, part of which you should be doing before bed. Well, this is all about good sleep hygiene. The first of these five tips is regularity. Go to bed at the same time and wake up at the same time. And that's no matter whether it's the weekday or the weekend. Why is this? Well, as we've spoken about in one of our earliest episodes, your brain has its own master 24-hour clock, the suprachiasmatic nucleus. And that master 24-hour circadian clock expects regularity and thrives best under conditions of regularity, including your sleep-wake schedule. So regularity is king. And when you anchor your sleep, you will improve both the quantity and the quality of that sleep. The second is temperature. And we've gone into great detail here in a mini-series before on this podcast, all about temperature. The advice is the following. Keep it cool. Your brain and your body need to drop their temperature by about 1 degree Celsius or about 2 to 3 degrees Fahrenheit for you to fall asleep and stay asleep. So cold it must be. The optimal suggestions that we have are somewhere between about 65 to 67 degrees Fahrenheit or around 18.5 degrees Celsius. I know that that sounds cold. And cold the ambient must be. It is perfectly fine, however, to wear thick socks and take a hot water bottle to bed during those especially colder nights, which I actually do. Probably makes me sound desperately... Oh, well, what I'm talking about, I am desperately old. But anyway, that's the second piece of advice, temperature. The sponsors supporting today's podcast are Athletic Greens and Inside Tracker. Now, Athletic Greens, which I'm sure you've probably heard of from lots of other science podcasters, is a nutrition drink, and it combines a complement of antioxidants, minerals, biotics, together with essential vitamins. And I myself have been using Athletic Greens, and by the way, I buy mine rather than getting any freebies to avoid any bias. And I've been doing that because I'll always invest in my own full nutritional health insurance coverage. And I also did my research on the ingredients, did my diligence, and I always trust scientific data as ground truth. So head on over to athleticgreens.com/Matt Walker, and you will get money off your first order. Plus, you will get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs. So that's athleticgreens.com/Matt Walker. The third is darkness. We are a dark, deprived society in this modern era, and we need darkness at night to trigger the release of the hormone that we've discussed before, which is melatonin. And here are the following tips. Yes, of course, it's important to stay away from close-up work or exposure to those blue light LED computer screens and iPads and phones. By the way, it's not just the LED light, it's that they trigger a very strong activating response in your brain, which prevents you from falling asleep easily. Now, as I said, it's not just about trying to sort of avoid those screens. And by the way, TV is okay, but don't watch TV in the bedroom, because otherwise that will start to train and fool your brain into thinking that when you get into bed, it's time for you to be wide awake and to be entertained by television, not the time for you to fall asleep. So try to stay away from that. But perhaps as important, if not even more important, is the following suggestion. In the last hour before bed, try to dim down half of the lights or even almost all of the lights in your home. And when you do that, try it just for a week. Just do the experiment for me if you want to and test it out. You will be surprised at how sleepy that lack of light, that increase in darkness, will give you in terms of a melatonin sleepiness signal. And by the way, that darkness theme continues not just outside of the bedroom, but when you get into the bedroom. So using things like blackout curtains and an eye mask, those are all great tools. The fourth tip is walk it out. And what I mean here is don't stay in bed for long periods of time awake. I've mentioned this before, and sort of our general rule of thumb is around about 25 minutes. If it's been 25 minutes and you can't fall asleep, or you've woken up and it's been 25 minutes and you can't get back to sleep, then don't worry. Just realize, you know, tonight is not my night. Get up, get out of bed, and in dim light in a different room if you can, just read a book or relax, do some stretching, and only come back to bed when you're sleepy, and there's no time limit here. And the analogy I often give, I don't know if it's a great one in truth, but you would never sit at a dinner table waiting to get hungry, so why would you lie in bed waiting to get sleepy? And the answer is that you shouldn't. Otherwise, your brain quickly starts to learn once again that this place called my bed, when I get into it, is the place I'm always awake rather than the place I'm soundly asleep. The fifth tip concerns alcohol and caffeine. And I've gone on in great detail in terms of mini-series about both of these things. Again, the general rule of thumb is the following. And of course, it's different for different people, but try to abstain from caffeine after around noon in the day, if we sort of anticipate a typical bedtime, and try not to drink alcohol frequently in the evenings. Certainly, if you're going to bed lightly inebriated, a little bit tipsy, not a good sign for your sleep. So those are the conventional tips that many of you have heard about. Now to the 5 unconventional suggestions. First is this: when you've had a bad night of sleep, or a string of bad nights of sleep, the very best advice I have for you is the following. Do nothing. And what I mean by this is, after that bad night of sleep, don't sleep in any later the following morning. don't nap during the day, and then don't try to go to bed any earlier the following evening. Let me explain that. Because if you try to sleep in late, which is very understandable as a reaction to a bad night of sleep, what happens is that when it comes to your natural bedtime the following evening, because you've slept in late, you haven't been awake long enough to build up all of that healthy sleepiness that we spoke about, that adenosine signal. And so you're not going to feel sleepy at your normal time. And that means that you're probably going to have a reduced chance of a good night of sleep once again. The second I mentioned is don't take naps. I've spoken about this before, about naps in our series there, that they can be a double-edged sword. Naps, once again, when you sleep, you just decrease that healthy sleepiness that you've been building up, and therefore it makes it again hard for you to try to fall asleep or stay asleep after a bad night. And then the final thing is this, don't go to bed any earlier that following night to try to compensate. Don't forget we have that circadian 24-hour rhythm, and it just goes up and down, no matter whether you've had a good night of sleep or a bad night of sleep. So it isn't going to be ready for your normal night of sleep until your normal time. But if you get into bed earlier as a compensation mechanism the following night, what's probably going to happen is that you're just going to lie in bed, not yet biologically ready for sleep, and once again you find yourself struggling to fall asleep and things fall apart. And I should note, by the way, that this great advice, to do nothing, is from one of the very best insomnia clinicians out there and a very dear friend of mine called Dr. Michael Perlis. And now the second unconventional suggestion, which is have a wind down routine. Because I meet many people in society who have perhaps slightly unrealistic expectations or even misperceptions about sleep. And they think that perhaps sleep should be like a light switch, that you should immediately be, you know, racing around in the evening, catching up on email, quickly, you know, watching some television. You dart into bed, you switch off the light, and you think that sleep should come just like the turning off of the light switch. Sleep, as a biological, as a physiological, and as a consequence, psychological process, it's not like that. Sleep is much more like landing a plane. It takes time for your biology to start to wind down and sort of bring you down and descend you down onto the terra firma of good sleep at night. And just think about children. Any new parent, I guarantee you, they will tell you all about the sacred bedtime routine. And when they figured it out that works for the child, they do not break it. They don't mess with it. Because if they do break that routine, it is not going to be good news in terms of the child's night of sleep. But why don't we do this as adults? Why don't we have our own wind down routine in the evening? Because we should. And you can find out whatever works for you and then stick to it fanatically. It can be, for example, stretching or reading, or it can be taking a hot bath. Or for some people, myself included, you can do meditation. And you can use an app if you like. I am a big fan, and at this stage I have no affiliation with these companies, but I'm a big fan of two apps. The first is with the British monk, Andy Puddicombe, who is one of the former founders of an app called Headspace. And I really like Andy as a guy and as his philosophy to meditate. It's great, really wonderful. And then the second fantastic app is also from another wonderful Brit, which is Michael Acton Smith. And the app is called Calm, C-A-L-M. And it is similarly wonderful. But by the way, it doesn't have to be meditation. I'm not pushing that. It can be whatever consistently brings you back down to a reduced calm state. Figure that out and then stick to it. The second partner supporting today's podcast is Inside Tracker, which is, it's a fascinating service. They come to your home And then they will do a blood draw, and then they will analyze your blood and your DNA to understand exactly what is happening inside of you, that unique snowflake individual, in terms of your varied blood and your metabolic and your hormonal health metrics. And what's also key is that they don't just provide you that, they then offer you a personalized set of suggested lifestyle changes so that you can better optimize your health. So just go to the link insidetracker.com/Matt Walker. And if you use that link, which is insidetracker.com/Matt Walker, you will get a healthy discount off your purchase. So now let's get back to the podcast. The third really comes back to the advice that I gave about do nothing, which is naps. Try to stay away from naps, especially after 1 p.m. in the afternoon when people are severely sleep deprived or they've been having a bad night of sleep. I totally understand why you would want to take a nap. But napping in the afternoon, especially late in the afternoon and certainly in the early evening, is just a little bit like snacking before your main meal. It's just going to take the edge off your sleep appetite. The fourth unconventional tip is don't count sheep. It is a total myth, because research from my wonderful colleague here at UC Berkeley, Professor Allison Harvey, has shown that people who actually started trying to count sheep took longer to fall asleep than those who didn't. And what was also great about her research is that they discovered a better trick, which is the following. Take yourself on a well-known mental walk. So think about a walk that you commonly do in the forest, or a hike that you do, or a walk down on the beach. Goodness, I'm very envious if you can do that if you're lucky enough to live by the beach. But just a really pleasant walk that you do. Think about that, as long as it's something that you know well. And then start in really great high fidelity detail. Think about leaving your front door, going down the steps, and then you're out, and then you're sort of moving this direction and that. Really take yourself piecemeal on that walk. And in doing that, it really helps you take your mind off itself. You stop overthinking trying to sleep because you're off on your wonderful mental walk, and then you fall asleep faster. And it is a proven trick that they've discovered. The fifth and final tip I have is to remove all clock faces from the bedroom, especially if you're struggling with sleep. I think I would say particularly or exclusively if you're struggling with sleep, because staring at a clock in the middle of the night at 3:25 a.m. is not going to do any favors for you being able to fall back asleep. In fact, it's been scientifically proven, once again, by my wonderful colleague, Dr. Allison Harvey at UC Berkeley. So it's no problem to have an alarm clock or a clock face, but turn that clock face away from you or hide it from view. And I finally want to come back before we end to what I said about insomnia at the beginning. None of these tips are going to help you cure or solve your insomnia. They are simply tips for better optimizing your sleep. So the analogy would be this. Let's say that you are an athlete and I am your trainer. I can give you all of the wonderful tips to improve your performance, but if you've got a broken ankle, none of those tips are going to help. Instead, we've got to get you to a doctor, fix the broken knee or the broken ankle, and only then can we return to trying to optimize your performance with these different types of suggestions. The same is true with insomnia. If you have insomnia, you need to go and get it clinically managed and seen to first, and then you can come back to these optimized tips. And with that, I will say I hope this has been a useful episode. And I will see you in the next episode, which is going to be, as I said, the first in an entire mini series dedicated to this thing called insomnia. Take care and goodbye for now.